Today is Tuesday, October the 27th, 297th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is meteorologist Brian Garcia from Woodley Island, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Good morning.
What is the official title of that place?
Is there one? National Weather Service Weather Forecast Office. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pretty straightforward, pretty simple.
I like Woodley Island.
Yeah, so do we. We like being out there, so.
Oh, boy. Our quote this morning comes from Philip Massinger. He that would govern others first should be the master of himself. What's the most common question you're getting these, or most frequent question that you're getting these days, Brian?
When's it going to rain?
And your response?
Good question. Yeah, it's not as easy as it looks, you know, with the way the patterns have shaped up over the last few years. We're really trying to nail down when it's going to rain, and lately it's the answer's been not anytime soon. Fortunately, this week we do have rain coming in tonight into tomorrow a little bit, and then we actually have a big pulse of rain coming in slated for Sunday time frame.
The modeling that is used, Troy's talked about it over the years, right. And Nancy a little bit before. The accuracy of these things.
Yeah.
It's really intriguing to me just as a native exercise. But then you compare it to, like, Poor Richard's Almanac.
Right.
And you go, okay, now wait a minute. This guy, I mean, they're going to print 6 months before the end of the year, and they're telling you what next November is going to be. How much of it is craft, and how much of it is science?
A lot of it is science, and a lot of it is craft in, to some degree. So it's a little of both. I tell you what, with weather, you're only as good as what's going into the models. So if we don't have a lot of observations out there, there's not going to be a lot to get the models, give it a kickstart. And if there's not a lot to give it a kickstart, then we obviously don't have something that's going to turn out pretty well. And to our west, here on the West Coast, is a huge piece of water called the Pacific Ocean. That's a huge data void for us. Compared to overland, where they have tens of thousands of observations, we literally have dozens and dozens of observations over the Pacific. So it can be kind of hard for the models to figure out what's going on. All they have is satellite to go off of, and that only tells you so much info.
Is that part of why the largest hurricane in recorded history, blah, 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 last week?
Yeah.
Didn't quite work out that way?
Well, that's actually really interesting. That hurricane, Hurricane Patricia, was an anomaly. Hurricanes generally don't develop that fast and get that strong that fast. Within 24 hours, it dropped about 100 millibars, which we have a meteorological term that we call bombing out. If it drops 24 millibars in 24 hours in an area of low pressure, that's what we call an atmospheric bomb.
So it kind of implodes?
Yeah, well, it just deepens so fast, and the wind fields expand so much, and it gains a lot of energy really fast. Patricia did that, but it didn't do 24 millibars in 24 hours. It did 100 millibars in 24 hours. So it went from a tropical storm, and it just made tropical storm, to a full-fledged Category 5 hurricane in 24 hours. It was really impressive. And 200-mile-per-hour winds, it wasn't the deepest pressure ever recorded in history, but its strongest winds.
It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Garcia from NOAA,
yep.
Woodley Island. It kind of condenses it a little bit more. By the end of the show, you're going to be out of the bay. Brian, the phrase El Niño or La Niña,
yeah.
Other than being Spanish.
Nicely done.
Okay. What do they mean? Is there a technical phrase for what that is, or is it like a syndrome or a set of circumstances that is just kind of loosely defined?
Well, El Niño is actually coined by the Ecuadorians as the Christ child, because the warm water showed up on the western coast of South America during Christmas time, and they noticed it because of their fishing habits. Well, when that warm water sloshes over from the western and central Pacific over to the eastern Pacific, right up against the coast of South America, it spreads north and south and ends up coming up into our coastal waters. And that's the reason, for example, last month we had really warm water temperatures.
So we're in the splat zone?
In a strong El Nino, yes, we're in the splat zone.
Really? So that current will be stronger than the Alaskan current?
Yeah, actually, it will push warm water right up the coast, and that Alaskan current and the Humboldt current that flows along our coast will actually shift just a little bit offshore and allow that warm water to creep up. And if you've noticed over the last couple of years, we haven't had as much strong northerly winds in the summer, haven't had as much fog. Well, those strong northerly winds send water southward. We haven't had that strong northerly wind, so that warm water's been allowed to creep northward.
So the warmer current will always go to the coast?
No, not necessarily. Sometimes it'll go offshore, and that's what the tuna fishermen really like. They like to find that boundary between the warm water and the cold water, because all the tuna stay in the warm water. They punch into the cold water, grab their food, and go back out, and the fishermen just pluck them off.
There's a phenomenon in the Brookings area called the Chetco effect.
Yep.
And I experience it crossing the Windchuck, a small little flat bridge, and somewhere between about a third of the way and two-thirds of the way, if it's one of those days, window open, arm out, it drops. It feels like it's 10 degrees, but let's say it's 5 degrees. I mean, it's a palpable difference. I've never stopped and gone back, walked to see, is that one step? In the water where you've got the warm current, cold current, is it that dramatic, or is it a kind of a zone where
it can be
mix?
Very dramatic. Yeah, it can be very dramatic, like that Chetco effect.
That's so cool.
Yeah, like we were talking off air, you know, the rivers and the water are much like the atmosphere. So how the atmosphere funnels that warm air down through the Chetco River Valley in a downsloping format, so the air warms as it comes down the mountains. But then you can get literally a half a mile away from that, and boom, it's 15 degrees colder. It's not 5. It's literally 15 to 20 degrees cooler. It's amazing.
So as you're looking at some of the modeling then with the weather, with the El Nino, can something really small, seemingly not a major event, cause dramatic impact?
On El Nino proper, probably not. What it'll do is it'll override its signature for a temporary time, but El Nino is such a large circulation that it will dominate the entire seasonal norm. It'll cause different things to occur, and like I said, sometimes the areas of low pressure that come in from the Gulf of Alaska can wipe out its effects temporarily, but it won't sustain a wipeout of El Nino.
So maybe for a day or two?
Yep. Like this weekend, you know, we'll get some rain and cold weather, and that's not typical for El Nino, because this system that we're going to get over the weekend is coming in from the northwest, and El Nino, we generally get our weather from the southwest.
So this is a reminder.
Yeah.
Nothing's constant here, gang.
Exactly.
So in those types of scenarios, do you guys double check the forecast? Because it's the model comes in and it's, whoops, that doesn't look like it's right.
Yeah.
What? And try to chase it back to make sure that
this we double check, triple check, bang our heads on the desk. We do it all. You know, it's an inaccurate science still. And like I said earlier, you know, we have the big void upstream from us over the Pacific Ocean. So a lot of it is satellite interpretation for us. The models can only do so well. We have to look at the satellites and kind of extrapolate what's going on.
What has more of an effect during the traditional wet season for us? Alaska or Hawaii?
Traditional wet season?
November through May.
Yeah. In a normal year.
Normal year, normal. There's no numbers on this one.
In a normal year, it's the North Pacific, so up through the Gulf of Alaska. That's where all the lows will dig in and get us. But they'll pull up the moisture. The really good lows will pull up the moisture from the subtropics, you know, north of Hawaii, even down to Hawaii. And that's when we get what people know as a Pineapple Express, or what we call in the weather business, an atmospheric river.
Most of us say it's warm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the warm, wet rain.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I remember that one. So now, will the El Nino sits on is anticipated to sit on top of that and to change that dynamic?
Yeah, El Nino will actually change that whole makeup of the Pacific weather pattern. So what it'll do is dominate, it'll cause weather to be dominated from the southwest as opposed to the northwest in what we typically get in a normal year. So this year, for example, we're expecting systems to come in from the southwest that are warm and wet. However, with El Nino, those systems generally hang farther to the south. So Southern California, even up to Central California, will probably be the target zone for all the rain. Our area kind of sits on a node. So sometimes we'll get it, sometimes we won't. We sit in between the effects of El Nino and La Nina.
So all the way up to San Francisco, Santa Rosa.
Yeah, more or less.
Central California,
really?
Thing. It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Brian Garcia, meteorologist for NOAA out on Woodley Island. Brian, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the El Nino concept and what goes on. Everything's a I don't want to say a crap game because that's not right. Percentages.
Absolutely, yeah.
What is the percentage that the winter this year, whether it's El Nino formally defined or not, brings a pretty good level of saturation for us, where we're really kind of like looking at things like river elevations,
right,
and things along those lines, and the lakes being filled or having to release a little bit off the spillway.
Yeah, well, the Climate Prediction Center does seasonal outlooks for NOAA, and they're located back east, so they look at El Nino. And
so they don't get the phone calls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they get the national media phone calls. So, yeah, they take a look at it in pretty good depth. And I think right now, I was looking at it yesterday, they're talking above normal precipitation for Central and Southern California. And they're talking, what is it, like a 70 or 80% chance of above normal precipitation. However, in California, all of the reservoirs that feed Central and Southern California are, of course, in the northern part of the state. And like I was saying earlier, we're kind of on that fringe area of the rain.
Yeah, I think we probably ought to be more concerned about what's the snowpack going to be in the Rockies.
Yeah, in
Colorado,
in the Sierras, yeah.
The feeder areas.
Feed the Colorado River.
Yeah, it's intriguing. So what are they thinking about for Oregon and our part of California? Is it going to be a 50-50 coin toss?
You know what? Historically speaking, over the last, 65 years that we've been keeping records of El Nino, it is pretty much a coin toss when it comes to El Ninos for Northern California and Southern Oregon. Now, Northern Oregon and Washington, Pacific Northwest, are in El Ninos. They're generally drier. La Ninas are their wet times.
It'll be interesting because I think there'll be disappointment if it doesn't happen this year.
Oh, absolutely.
For us.
Absolutely.
And Southern California, I mean, it's all concrete. It's all going to go out in the ocean anyway, so who cares?
Your words, not mine.
Well... we were in Vegas a couple weeks ago. We had that thunderstorm that caused the floods. We were bringing that with us as we went down 95. And then we left going out 58 the day before all the floods hit.
So, wow.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they can't handle a quarter inch of rain or a half inch of rain, let alone something of any magnitude at all, just because, you know, it's desert and concrete.
I know the state's working a lot of different avenues right now to capture that water before it runs out to the ocean. But, of course, those efforts aren't aren't to fruition yet. So they aren't there where they can capture all that water before it runs out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the dynamics in those communities change.
Yeah, absolutely.
See if they can capture some. So for us, what is more critical for wetness? The currents, the wind patterns, the place you're located on the coast, the physicalness.
Let's answer that simply, yes. All of the above.
So if you live in Hiapom, even if it's in a drought, you're still going to get nailed with 60-plus inches.
Yeah, you know, the Cape Mendocino area, the King Range, you pretty much put any sort of southwest wind on them, and they're going to squeeze out some kind of precipitation. It's pretty amazing that that place goes from sea level to, what, a few thousand feet in, like, half a mile. It's really neat. But, yeah, the currents play a difference. The wind patterns play a difference. And, of course, where you're at will play a difference. Obviously, the farther east you are, so the people out in Weaverville, for example, they don't see as much rain as we do because we're right at the coast and we suck it all up because it hits our coastal mountains and squeezes it all out. The wind patterns will play a difference because it will depend upon if we're getting that warm, moist air, the moisture-laden air from the southwest, and that's generally what precedes cold fronts, versus a northwest wind that generally brings drier, cooler air. So it's a really complicated system, and Crescent City gets a lot. We don't get a lot generally because of the King Range. We get rain shadowed in all these southerly events, whereas the King Range gets hammered every year.
I was just written down on 101, just north of last chance grade.
Yes.
Okay, so normal speak, sorry. Just north of Trees and Mystery.
Yep.
There are a couple microclimates there that are always intriguing to me as going, you know, zipping up and down the coast from Mill Creek, which is about a mile into the trees from Crescent City, mm-hmm. to where you're running along the bluffs. There's two or three different areas that are in there. Either it'll be foggy and all of a sudden it's 75 degrees.
Yep.
Or conversely, going into this time, it'll be dry, come around the corner and there's snow on the ground.
Right.
How can that be so narrowly defined?
It's all the terrain.
It's just the canyons and the run-ups and
it
the
really
gullies.
Is. Yeah, and where the rivers sit and all the creeks sit, and then which way the winds are blowing in and out of them. It becomes a real challenge to forecast that kind of stuff, as you can imagine. You know, even
mile marker 15 versus mile marker 20.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things we noticed early in the fall was the temperature differences between Eureka and Crescent City, depending upon the wind patterns. When we had some offshore flow, generally we get our warmer weather. Our all-time record high happened in October of 1993, and it was 88, if I remember right, here in Eureka. And that's generally with the southeast wind, we get warm because it comes down the Eel River Valley, warms up. But in Crescent City, with that same type of southeast wind, they stay kind of cool. But you throw a northeast wind on them, they warm up. And you throw a northeast wind on us, we don't get as warm. So those little types of wind direction changes play a huge difference on where the fog sits, where the snow is, where it warms up, where it cools down.
And I would think if those winds change, you can see those change direction. You can see those temperature changes real quickly.
Absolutely.
One way or the other.
Yep.
What causes a river, I can't remember how it's referred to, but the breezes on the river in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Is that just pure air temperature once the sun goes off, goes behind the mountain? That in and of itself is enough to cause the change, and now you start getting the breezes coming down the gorge or down the river?
Yeah, so you can get up valley and down valley winds, and yeah, it's just the temperature differentials between day and evening. So as the land starts to cool off in the evening, the way the heat's set up, it actually will cause the wind to flow a different way.
How sensitive? I mean, is it a half degree?
It can be extremely sensitive. You talk to the fire weather guys, and they'll see it with a half degree, a degree. And, you know, other times it'll take a handful of degrees to do it.
Case by case.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Times 842. We'll be back with more from Brian Garcia.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 847. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Brian Garcia. Brian, earlier, Damien and Tommy and the weather forecast, we're talking about a super high tide, or hey, that's my phraseology, tomorrow.
Yeah.
The moon looked cool last night.
Yeah, it did.
What causes these inflated high tides or super high tides? I don't know. Is it a king tide? I don't know. I know there's phrases that are thrown around on these things. What's going on? Why this without having, or are we having a storm surge also?
Oh, great question. The tides coming up. Now, I wouldn't traditionally call these king tides. I know the baykeepers are calling them king tides. King tides generally happen in December because we're at perigee and perihelion in terms of the moon and the sun. So we get the closest we are to the moon and the closest in our orbit to the sun. So you get the strong gravitational pull from those two on the waters of the earth. Obviously, the land doesn't move that much.
So you mean a double whammy?
Double whammy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Double whammy, exactly. So this time, you know, we're getting pretty close to the moon. So the water's getting pulled up from the moon. So we'll get some pretty high tides today and tomorrow, and actually there's coastal flood advisory out for King Salmon and some low-lying areas like the Arcata Bottoms, for example. Some of those areas will flood just naturally because of the tide. Now, the storm surge, you ask as well, because we have southerly winds and we have had those going on for a couple of days across the Pacific just off the west coast, and we have the front coming in, due to the Coriolis effect, it shoves water into the coast. So you put the tides with a little bit of water being shoved into the coast, we elevate the water levels above what is normally predicted. And right now we're running about a half a foot to a foot above normal tides.
So a little bit to get our feet wet, but not hugely problematic like it's been between Eureka and Arcata out on 101.
Right.
2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, that was several years ago.
It was coming,
yeah,
coming across the roadway.
Yeah, that takes an extra little punch.
Now, the El Nino pattern is completely independent of this?
Correct.
Or does it compound it?
It is independent, but you can see impacts as a result of it. So, for example, when we come December time, when we start getting strong systems coming in from the southwest, when we get to the king tide range, and we have those strong southerly winds, we could exacerbate the tides even more.
To a foot?
Yeah, we've actually seen anomalies. So what is over-predicted, we've seen over-predicted by as much as a foot and a half at times.
Ooh, yeah. That's enough to get your attention.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
Maybe what's-his-name will come back. Maybe he won't. I don't know. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you owe. See you then.